All right, right now we are on the phone with Jack Duffy. He recently published a book called The Man from 2063. It's a fictional story that takes place in the year 2063, going back 100 years in time to save JFK. Now, Jack Duffy is a lawyer and author, obviously, and has been basically researching the JFK assassination for, I guess, the past 40 years. So, Jack Duffy, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on your show today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the JFK assassination is something that's, haunted me my whole life. I was 6 years old when it happened, and... it's one of those things that you never forget, even if you're just 6 years old. And I think probably a lot of people my age are also, fairly obsessed with it. I think the thing that has haunted most of us is just the unsatisfying answers we've gotten revolving the assassination. There's the official account, which does not jive with a lot of research that's been done. There are a myriad of various different conspiracy theories. Some of them are just downright insane, but mixed in with those are very reasonable ones. And so it gets kind of confusing. Now, I know the book that you wrote recently is a fictional story, but we were talking a little bit off air, and you were mentioning that there's, I guess, a lot of fact that you dug up during the research for making this book. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So one of the things that I found most interesting was, I guess, the crux of the story is that the JFK assassination was pulled off by rogue agents of the CIA, essentially an elite assassination squad that felt betrayed by Kennedy from his lack of support after the Bay of Pigs. Now, is that part one of the things that you brought up as research, or is that fictionalized?
No, that's very factual. The CIA was very upset with President Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs invasion failed because they blamed him for the failure, and he took the blame for it, although it wasn't totally his fault. It was planned by the Eisenhower administration. He inherited it when he took over, and he did not give air cover to the Cuban and American forces that were anti-Castro forces that were trying to invade Cuba, and that was probably a mistake, but that wasn't the only reason why they were mad at him. They were also mad at him because he didn't take out Castro during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which, of course, had he done that, we would have had a nuclear war. But then they were also mad at Kennedy for wanting to pull out of South Vietnam, which is what he was going to do had he not been killed. And that is one of the major theories by many, many researchers as to why he was assassinated, is that they did not want us out of Vietnam. The powers that be, the military-industrial complex and the CIA and the military did not want us to pull out of Vietnam like Kennedy wanted us to. And so that's one of the reasons why they think a lot of people think he was killed, among many other reasons.
Is there documentation that shows that he did want to pull us out of Vietnam?
Yes. Yes. He had signed an order several weeks before he was killed saying he was going to start a gradual pullout in 65 and also 64 of advisors and what limited troops were there. That's documented. And then, of course, right after the assassination, LBJ, who took over, did the exact opposite. He escalated the war, and, of course, we know how the war turned out. Kennedy was told by General MacArthur, World War II General MacArthur, not to get involved in another Asian ground war. We'd already done that in Korea, and although we didn't lose that war, we didn't win it either. And he had warned Kennedy about getting involved in a land war in South Vietnam. He said it's not a winnable war unless you want to use nuclear weapons, which we can't do that, so it's a losing war. Don't do it. And Kennedy listened to him. And Dave Powers and Kenny O'Donnell, who were Kennedy's closest advisors, have both testified or both said before they died that JFK had told him a few weeks before he was killed that he was going to start pulling us out of South Vietnam, and that was his goal. So there's more than enough documentation to show that that's not made up, that he really was going to do that.
So what about the rogue CIA agents? Now, you actually give them names in the book. I assume those names are not the actual names?
Those are based on some real people. There was a man named David Phillips, who's dead now, who was the head of the assassinations operations for the CIA back at the time Kennedy was killed. He was seen in Dallas several weeks before the assassination with Lee Harvey Oswald in a lobby of a hotel in downtown Dallas. This is documented by an anti-Castro Cuban who was there to meet with Phillips, who saw Oswald with him. He later identified Oswald from photographs. That's who the guy was that was meeting with David Phillips. When Oswald left, this Cuban walked up and said, "Who was that guy you were talking to?" And he said, "Oh, he's one of our guys. Don't worry about it." Now, the guy could be wrong or lying, but most researchers believe he's telling the truth. He has no reason to be making this story up. Oswald was over in Russia, suspiciously, for some reason, and it just came out recently through other researchers' work that he was sent over there by the CIA to spy on the Russians, not as a defector like he pretended to be. Oliver Stone found this out when he made the movie JFK, that there was a defector program in place that the CIA was using to send poor white men over to Russia, pretending to be disenchanted with the United States way of life, and then planning them as spies in Russia to spy on the communists on the Soviet Union. And they believe Oswald was one of those sleeper agents that was over there. That's where he met his wife, Marina. I've talked with Marina, too, and she tends to believe that he was over there for some other reason other than just saying he wanted to be in Russia. So there's other evidence that points to the CIA having connections with Oswald. A recent book came out by a very reliable and respected researcher about the CIA and Oswald, and he found out that right before the assassination, the CIA had a file already set up on Oswald, and that they destroyed a lot of information in that file before and after the assassination. And the CIA has never been really honest about their relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald from the day of the assassination until today. They've never really come out and admitted that they had any relationship, but they've always denied that they had anything to do with him. And the evidence points directly to the opposite on that. So we know they're lying about that. Why would they be lying about Oswald unless they're covering up something?
So the basic premise of Lee Harvey Oswald is that he was working for the CIA. It was part of a program where people defected, went to the Soviet Union, spied on the Soviet Union, and then came back. Now, the thing is, the one thing that seemed suspicious to me always was the fact that he was first off able to defect to the Soviet Union, then able to defect back. I mean, this was during the height of the Cold War. That seemed very improbable that someone could do that.
And he was never debriefed when he came back to the United States, which is unbelievable. I mean, you would think that a guy who said he was a traitor, who had turned himself in and said he wanted to be a communist, and he comes back over here, you would think the FBI and the CIA would be all over him, interviewing him. And neither one of them showed any interest in Oswald when he came back to the United States, which is very weird.
So the book basically showed him as someone who was very easy to set up, since he had a sketchy background, defected to the Soviet Union, came back. And if he was working with the CIA, the book basically says that he is set up as the patsy by this
rogue organization.
There were actually assassins set up all around Dealey Plaza.
Right. Some more evidence that proves that he was probably set up by the CIA is that there was an incident in Mexico City several weeks before the assassination. It's been well documented. Somebody who was not Oswald was down in Mexico City visiting the Cuban and Russian embassies, pretending to be Oswald for some reason. He was using Lee Harvey Oswald's name, and it was not Oswald. The reason why we know that is because the CIA took photographs of this man at both of the embassies, and the House Committee that investigated the Kennedy assassination and the Warren Commission both got a hold of those photos. And the man in the photos is clearly not Oswald, but yet he's using Oswald's name. Now, this is weeks before Kennedy gets shot. So why would a man be down in Mexico using, of all people in the world, name Oswald, unless there's something going on with Oswald? The man also made phone calls, and they taped the phone calls, and the man's voice is not Lee Harvey Oswald. Yet he refers to himself as Lee Harvey Oswald on the phone. The House Committee got a hold of the audio tapes because the CIA claimed that they had erased them accidentally, and it turned out that was a lie. So they lied to the committee right there, and the committee got a hold of those audio tapes and played them, and it's obviously not Oswald on the phone. So why in the world would somebody be impersonating Lee Harvey Oswald right before the assassination in a foreign country unless the CIA or somebody has something to do with this?
Now, in your book, the CIA itself is not condoning or supporting this action.
Right.
This is rogue agents of the CIA, but this would be a very big black eye on the CIA. Why would they not have wanted to clear this up?
Well, I don't believe that the CIA as an organization got together at the top and said, "Let's kill President Kennedy." I just don't believe that happened. Uh-huh. They may have realized after it happened that people within their organization had done it without their authority, and then they had a big problem, and they must have realized, they probably realized that Oswald had been set up or was brought into the conspiracy or whatever. And that now that he was dead or killed by Ruby, they had to cover this thing up. That's just one of the popular theories that, Oswald was killed by a guy who had connections to organized crime. That's another reason why I think the organized crime theory comes into play along with the rogue agents. I think they were working in hand with the mafia, and that both of them together helped kill Kennedy and kill Oswald.
So let's get to that connection, the Mob Association and Jack right. Ruby. Right. The book basically kind of leans on the mob connections with Jack Ruby to take out this loose end called Lee Harvey Oswald. Explain that.
Right. Well, right before Ruby killed Oswald, he was receiving phone calls from very high-level organized crime figures. This is a fact. The House Committee found out about this. That high-level mobsters were calling Ruby on the phone for some reason. And, of course, back then they didn't have the way to trace or to audio tape the calls like they do now. But that's never been explained. Why were the high-level mobsters interested in talking to Jack Ruby for some reason? Right after Ruby killed Oswald, the first people that went to visit him in the jail there in Dallas were high-level mafia people in Dallas. They were the very first people that went to talk to him right after he killed Oswald. Now, why would they be interested in talking to Ruby? Ruby was connected with Sam Giancana's Chicago crime syndicate. He had grown up in Chicago, was from Chicago, and had come down to Dallas to run a nightclub. And Ruby hinted that the mob had set him up in business here in Dallas to run their operations. Ruby knew a lot of the police officers by first names. He would treat the officers to his nightclubs, to strippers, to drinks. He would give them free drinks, free food. He was hands-on with the Dallas Police Department, so he was the perfect kind of person who could penetrate the police department security and get to Oswald and kill him. Ruby himself said many times after he killed Oswald on video and in interviews that there was more to it than one person, that he was part of, that he blamed, basically he was part of a conspiracy is what he was saying. He just didn't name who was involved because I don't think he knew. I think all he knew is that he was ordered to kill Oswald, and that's what he did, and that's what he was forced to do. I don't think he wanted to do it, but he did it because the mob told him, if you don't kill him, you know, we're going to kill you, basically.
So let's get back to the official explanation, the Warren Commission. Now, there are still plenty of people who firmly believe that is what happened. Is, you know, that is what happened, it's very much very laid out in many, many, many pages of information. Yet when they were investigating it shortly after the assassination, they got some of the top snipers in the country to try and recreate what supposedly happened from the sixth-floor book depository building there.
They couldn't do it.
No one could do it. No sharp shooter could do it, and Lee Harvey Oswald was not known as a particularly sharp shooter when he was in the military. So that was
all the Marines that served with Oswald that were interviewed by the Warren Commission, they actually saw Oswald shoot on the rifle range. And he was shooting at a stationary target, not at a moving target, and they said he couldn't even hit the stationary targets on the rifle range. That's how uncoordinated he was. One Marine put it this way. He said, if I had to pick one man to shoot at me, I'd pick Oswald. That's how bad a shot he was. they all thought it was laughable that this guy could have pulled off the assassination the way it was done with a moving limousine, hitting a target right in the head, point blank almost. They said, that's laughable. There's no way this guy could have done that. Oswald was barely qualified as a marksman, which is the lowest category of the Marine Corps for shooting ability. Then he barely qualified as a sharpshooter, so he was by no means any great shot. Plus, the rifle that he allegedly used on the sixth floor was a horrible weapon. The bolt was hard to operate. The trigger was hard to operate. The scope was off. It was misaligned after the FBI found it and tested it. Robert Frazier, who was the FBI's top sniper at the time, tried to use the same weapon that was found on the sixth floor, not a similar weapon. He used the actual Oswald rifle and tried to do what Oswald did, and he couldn't even do it. He told the Warren Commission there's no way this gun could do what this guy did. Another top sniper, Carlos Hathcock, is dead now. He was a top sniper in Vietnam. He recreated the assassination using a weapon just like Oswald's, and he was a top sniper, and he couldn't even do what Oswald did.
So in order to make this theory work that is put out in the Warren Commission, there had to be only three shots. And in order for that to happen, there had to be what they call a magic bullet, one that right. Passed through JFK and Connally twice and a very strange trajectory. I know most ballistic experts say that's virtually impossible, especially since the bullet was pretty much pristine, the one that was supposedly recovered.
Yes, you're correct. They did tests on Oswald's ammunition at the Army Firearms Institute using the same kind of weapon, same kind of ammunition. They fired test bullets into cadaver's wrists, which is where Connally had the most damage, was to his right wrist. They tested that. They fired bullets into the wrists of dead bodies, and the bullets came out totally flattened, deformed, just like a pancake, like you would expect when a bullet hits a solid bone, because the wrist bone is the most dense bone in your body. And they've never yet proven that one bullet could go through a human wrist and come out looking like Exhibit 399, which is almost pristine. That's why everybody believes it's impossible, because the bullet that hit Connally went not only through his back and out his front, hit a rib, It went through his wrist and into his thigh. Connally even said before he died many, many times when he was interviewed that he did not believe one bullet hit both men. He said, I do not believe in that theory. I think that's wrong. He never agreed that he was hit by the same bullet as Kennedy. And he ought to know he was in the car and he was an experienced hunter. He said that one bullet hit Kennedy and then another bullet hit him separately, and that's, I believe, what happened also. In addition, when they opened up Kennedy's chest at the autopsy, this just came out recently in a new book by Anthony Summers, one of the technicians who was in the autopsy room told researchers that when they opened Kennedy's chest up, there was no point of entry that showed a bullet had penetrated his back, which would have been necessary for the bullet to go through him and then into Connally. So the bullet that hit Kennedy in the back, because he had a back wound also, it was much lower down the neck, that proves that bullet did not even go through Kennedy at all. So it's just more and more keeps coming out that proves this couldn't have happened the way the Warren Commission said it happened. It's really unbelievable.
Right.
People still believe the official version, but
which begs the question, because Chief Justice Earl Warren was a well respected man, why would they perpetrate a cover up? Now in the book, it basically says to keep the country from basically exploding, from imploding from some of this information. Is there any evidence of that?
Yes. Well, in some books that have just come out recently, the one I quoted earlier about the files being destroyed, the same researcher interviewed a bunch of the Warren Commission lawyers who had never been interviewed before, and they told him that Earl Warren had told them at the time that he did not want to go look for a conspiracy. He said, we're not looking for conspiracies here. We're looking to close this thing up, not create no more paths down the wrong road. I think Earl Warren probably suspected there might have been more to it than Oswald, but I don't think he wanted to get to the bottom of it for a lot of reasons. He might have been told by LBJ, look, if we find a conspiracy here, we could be in a nuclear war with Russia or Cuba, and it's not worth that. So let's don't go down that trail. That's just one of the theories, that LBJ was the one that wanted to shut this thing down, too, because he didn't want to have a conspiracy coming out. I think the Warren Commission knew that there was probably more to it, but for whatever reason, they decided not to try to get to the bottom of it, and that's an unfortunate thing because... Oswald was dead. They couldn't prove anything because he was dead. So they just decided, hey, we got a dead guy here. Let's just pin it on him. He's not going to be going to trial. So let's just leave it like that and let's put this thing to rest and avoid any kind of a conspiracy here. And I think that's what they did, unfortunately.
Now, of course, if this had happened in this day and age, there would be every single smartphone would be catching it from every single angle possible. Yeah,
right.
All we had is one guy named Abraham Zapruder that just happened to have a 8mm camera right there and caught the whole thing.
Right.
On
right.
A very shaky thing. But even with just that, I've watched the video enhanced over and over, and Kennedy's head does seem to jerk back and to the left, which would be the bullet would have come from the grassy knoll.
Rob, let me talk about that for a minute. Two of the doctors that I became close friends with that worked on President Kennedy in Parkland, they both told me that the back of the president's head was blown out completely by a bullet that had come in from the right front. They could see the entry wound at the hairline of Kennedy, so they knew the bullet had hit him in the top of the hairline and gone right through his head and come out the back. The back of Kennedy's head, according to every doctor in Dallas, was blown out by a big exit wound. They described the wound as bigger than your fist. Dr. Charles Crenshaw, who's deceased now, told me before he died that he could have put his fist in the wound. It was that big. It was as big as a grapefruit or bigger. Robert McClellan told me the same thing, and all the other doctors that were interviewed all said the same thing, too. So you've got all these doctors in Dallas saying that there was a huge exit wound in the back of the president. That's what killed him. There's no way that could have been caused by a shot from the rear by Oswald. So right there you've got medical proof from doctors that the shot that killed Kennedy had to have come from the right front, which is the grassy knoll area. The first person that ran up to the grassy knoll, the first police officer that ran up there, confronted a man right behind the fence who pulled out a Secret Service badge and said he was with the Secret Service. Of course, the man turned out to be a bogus person because there were no legitimate Secret Service agents that were up on the grassy knoll. The officer apparently didn't question him much and let him go, unfortunately. So when people say, well, there's no evidence anybody was up there, yes, there is evidence because an officer confronted a guy behind the fence. Many witnesses, I've interviewed many of them, 54 witnesses all said the fatal shot came from behind the picket fence on the knoll. Not one of them said it came from the book depository. At least the ones that were down in the plazas didn't say that.
Well, Bill Newman, see a lot of people went running up the grassy knoll right after
right,
the shot.
Right, S.M. Holland, who was one of the key witnesses, he's dead now, but he was on the railroad overpass. He told several researchers in the 60s that the last shot came from behind the picket fence. He saw the gun smoke of the shot come off the fence. That's the one that killed the president. He ran behind the fence immediately to try to catch the person, and it had rained that morning in Dallas. Today, if you go to Dealey Plaza, the back of the fence is all covered with pavement. It's all paved over now with concrete. At the time of the assassination, it was all dirt. He ran back there, and there was still mud from the rain, and he went to the exact spot where he claimed he saw a shot come from. And what did he find? Lo and behold, two human footprints. Footprints were showing him standing in the exact spot behind the fence where the shot came from. So you've got physical evidence of footprints where Sonny was standing there. And you ask yourself, well, maybe he was just an innocent bystander. Well, most people wouldn't be standing behind the fence. If they're innocent, they'd be out in front, you know, waving at the president. So what is this guy doing behind the fence? You know, he's got to be back there because he's a sniper. They smelled gunpowder in the air, which how do you explain that if there was no shot from that direction? There's so much evidence that points to a sniper on the knoll that you can't ignore it all. I mean, there's no way to ignore it all.
Now, also the rifle that Oswald had was shooting conventional jacketed bullets. Your book talks about the kill shot was a hollow point explosive bullet.
Right. The reason why I believe that is because Dr. Cyril Wecht, who I know, who's one of the top forensic pathologists in the world, he's one of the leading pathologists that has criticized the Warren Commission for 52 years. He went into the National Archives and got permission to look at the x-rays and autopsy pictures of President Kennedy. He said in several documentaries that, and he told me that the x-rays show microscopic gun bullet fragments all throughout the president's brain, which indicate, anybody who knows any of my bullets knows that that indicates a explosive type of dum-dum bullet or hollow point bullet that explodes on impact into dozens and dozens of fragments, whereas Oswald's ammunition was military ammunition, which doesn't explode like that. It just goes through and makes a hole. So the x-rays themselves, if they're legitimate x-rays, prove that the shot that hit the president in the head, or at least one shot that killed him, couldn't have come from Oswald. It had to have come from another sniper who was using a hollow point type of bullet, which the mafia and the CIA used to, because those kinds of bullets are impossible to trace. I mean, they're not stupid. They know how to kill people.
So now, speaking of autopsy results, the brain of JFK supposedly disappeared.
Right, it did. It disappeared out of the archives, according to Dr. Wecht, which to this day they don't know where it is. They don't know who took it. Some people speculate that Robert Kennedy might have taken it and buried it with the president, because President Kennedy was exhumed in the late 60s by Robert Kennedy. It was done at night when nobody was around, but they knew that it happened because there were photographers there that took pictures of it. And you can see the president's grave, the casket is up and raised up, and both Ted and Bobby Kennedy are standing by the grave. And next to Bobby's feet is a metal box or metal container. And we don't know what was in that container, but several researchers speculated that that might have been the president's brain, that Bobby buried the brain with the body and then had the body reburied, but who knows.
So one thing in the book, and I know you're pressed for time because you've got a client that you've got to meet. One thing in the book is that the news eventually comes out years later, years in the future. There was stuff that is sealed in archives that's not going to be released for a number of years. Do you think that when that information is released and that we're going to find out more information about this?
Well, I don't think it's going to ever reveal who really killed the president. I think whoever did it or whoever had it done had it all destroyed or had all their evidence destroyed a long time ago to prevent the truth from ever coming out. That's just my own opinion. I wish the truth would come out, but I'm very skeptical at this late date if we're ever going to know the whole story. We know some of the story because, for instance, E. Howard Hunt, who was one of the Watergate burglars, he gave a deathbed confession to his son, who audiotaped it on audio tape. Mm-hmm. E. Howard Hunt claimed to his son that he was involved in the conspiracy that killed JFK. He hated JFK. He said the CIA, all of them hated Kennedy for the reasons I already elaborated earlier. And he said that his father admitted on his deathbed that he had helped plan the assassination and that he was, in fact, in Dallas, in Dealey Plaza when it was done. And that his father said the CIA pulled it off, and they had, it was a rogue element that did it, and that the mob was in on it with him, the organized crime was in on the conspiracy, and that's what happened. And he said he wanted to come clean before he died and just tell the whole story before he died. And his son said, you know, he has no reason to make this up, because why would he point the finger at his own people? If he was going to make up a story, he wouldn't be pointing the finger at the CIA if that's what he was trying to do. He would point the finger somewhere else, but he pointed the finger at his own people. So I believe he's telling the truth, and I think we know some of the story, but not the whole thing.
And of course, E. Howard Hunt was one of the quote-unquote hobos that was rounded up.
But supposedly. I don't know if he really was or not. That's one of the theories. I mean, they've never really proven conclusive that was really him or not. Mm-hmm. Somebody, he looks like the guy, but I don't know. I mean, he could have been him. Who knows?
Yeah. And interestingly enough, E. Howard Hunt's son lives here in Humboldt County and is a musician locally, and I've talked with him many times about it, and it's rather an interesting coincidence.
Right, exactly. Well, maybe we can get together and have when I have more time and talk some more about this.
Sure.
It's really fascinating.
It absolutely is, and I appreciate your work. And again, the book, again, it is a fictionalized work, but it does contain a lot of the research you've done over the past 40 years. It's called The Man from 2063, and available at Amazon, I know for sure, and probably other places.
Yes. Well, I hope people will buy the book and read it. Like I said, it's not total fiction, but it tells a plausible story about what might happen if we could ever go back and have time travel.
All right, Jack Duffy, thank you again for your time. I know you're a busy man, and thanks for all the research you've done over the years. Fascinating stuff.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Jack Duffy, author of The Man from 2063.